are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. You are with Patricia Traina. I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places, including The Athletic New York, Forbes, SB Nation, Inside Football, and a bunch of other places. You can follow all my work by following me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina. And speaking of The Athletic, I'm very happy to have on the line with me Stephen Holder. He covers the Indianapolis Colts for The Athletic Indianapolis, and he's going to help me break down the Giants-Colts matchup coming up this Sunday. Stephen, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. So, Stephen, let's jump right into the matchup, and let's start off, if we could, by kind of going back to the start of the season. The Colts, of course, you know, had that wild offseason where they were supposed to get Josh McDaniels. They ended up, quote unquote, settling for Frank Reich. What has been, you know, just following the whole response and how that all played out, how would you say they responded to that, you know, being jilted, if you will, and, you know, especially at the start of the season?
Well, I will tell you this. My first reaction, I remember the night it happened, it was just, you know, a crazy, bizarre set of circumstances, sequence of events. But the next day, GM Chris Ballard came out and he did a press conference. And he just exuded this confidence. And it was really impressive to see. I think one of the things that I noticed about him was just his ability to not be shaken by the situation, right? And it was definitely, you know, sort of a jarring situation, you would think. But you didn't notice that. You didn't hear that in his voice at all. And he seemed totally in control of the situation. And so he immediately, within 4 or 5 days, had settled on Frank Reich. And I think, in retrospect, if you ask everyone inside Colts headquarters today, they will tell you it perhaps is the best thing that ever happened to them. And they didn't know it then. But Frank Reich has been clearly a breath of fresh air for the franchise. He has been. He's gotten this team to buy into his message and to his philosophy far more than I think I ever could have imagined. And he's a big reason they are where they are. So it really was crazy. And then the backdrop, by the way, to all this was at the time Andrew Luck was on the shelf, and we didn't know what was ultimately going to be his fate. So there was really a crazy sequence of events when you talk about the entire offseason, but certainly nothing tops the Josh McDaniels fiasco. And how that played out, at least initially.
You brought up Andrew Luck, and of course, you know, he was coming off of the shoulder issue. I mean, were you surprised to see that he was able to come back? I mean, how serious was it to where they were concerned that maybe he might never be the same again?
So I would say pretty much once the offseason got going, And we were able to have, you know, some be able to talk to people on a regular basis, and Andrew Luck was making real progress in his comeback in terms of physically, not throwing, but just physically making progress, getting stronger in the shoulder. When I saw all those things start to happen, and from every source that I had talked to, I had come to be convinced that he would make it back. The question still up until it actually happened, was what would he look like and how would he perform? And that was what I really had no sense of. I had very, I think, realistic expectations. I thought a guy who missed an entire year, who really basically missed 18 months in terms of actual team action, what is a realistic expectation for a guy like that, right? And the answer for me was, well, not very much, at least initially. I thought it would take him some time. He didn't throw at all in OTAs. He never practiced with the team at all in the offseason. He started throwing in June, But really, it was really not an intense throwing regimen, not until maybe July after camp had broken and going into training camp. So we get to training camp in the final week of July, and I'm thinking, okay, well, it'll be a couple weeks before he really gets going. And no, it's day one of training camp. Andrew Luck is out there taking snaps with the first team offense, and he looks like fine. So I was blown away. I never expected that. He still had fine-tuning to do, and he wasn't himself, but he was out there and was doing it, and he looked the part. So I would say maybe 3 weeks into the regular season, I had moved on, and I had no more doubts. I mean, at that point, he was starting to make every throw, and you could see he wasn't really inhibited. And he just got more and more confidence. The last step was Andrew Luck getting more and more confidence in the shoulder. And once that happened, he stopped thinking about it, and he started making all the throws in the menu without any hesitation. And now you see the finished product, and it's pretty good.
Yes, indeed. Now, what was interesting, what I found interesting in doing some research about the Colts is they started out, I believe, 1-5. And it was around late October that they finally clicked and put it all together. Now, I know from the Giants' perspective, you know, they started off, as you know, I think 1-7. And we kept hearing about the roster turnover and how it took some time for everybody to come together. When you look back at the start that the Colts had, did they go through a similar situation where they, you know, turned over their roster and they just had to get used to the new coaching staff and some new pieces that were added?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to really kind of step back and see it for what it is. And you're talking about a team that, as we already talked about, new coach, quarterback hadn't played for an entire year. The roster turnover was very significant. You had a young team. They had 11 draft picks this year, okay? And most of those guys made the team. So you're talking about, you know, just an influx of young talent. And in fact, the majority of their team is first and second year players, probably half their team. So, I mean, this was an incredibly young team with a new coach, quarterback, hadn't played in a year. So, like, there was really, this was a completely blank slate. And that's great, but there's a lot of work that has to be done to get that going, right? And all the, and I should add, new scheme on offense and defense. So everything was new. So, you know, look, I think in retrospect, there is some expectation that that's going to require some time, right? Mm-hmm. For guys to gel, for them to learn the system, for coaches to get their bearings and get everybody to buy in, and just all those things that have to happen when you have all of these changes. It's a lot. So, I mean, this wasn't a ready-made team. Sometimes you have that, right? You have a situation where maybe you have a new coaching staff and new systems, but you have a more veteran team. Well, this wasn't that. So yet, despite all that, they played very good football early in the season. They had a lot of injuries that they couldn't overcome, and ultimately they beat themselves in many instances by just basically not finishing games. So, you know, you are what your record is. So they were a 1-5 team, but they had seen enough to that point where they truly believe, you know what, we can turn this around, but we're either going to do it or we're just going to, you know, let this season slip away. And Frank Reich, I just think, had a great ability to get his team to see what could be and not what had been. And that's how you turn it around and you win 7 out of 8. It's been pretty remarkable.
Yes, indeed. Now, a couple of players that have really stepped up, I believe, for the Colts. Marlon Mack, running back in his second season, took over for Frank Gore, who I believe went to Miami. And also the Colts acquired Eric Ebron, the tight end, who I believe was with Detroit for the beginning part of his career. What have those two brought to the offense that maybe was missing in the past?
So Marlon Mack was obviously there last year, but I just don't think there's two things. The system has changed, and he has benefited from the system change. And then he's a more intelligent runner this year. Okay, so Marlon Mack last year was a boom or bust player. He was a guy who, frankly, if he didn't gain 8 or 9 yards, he was going to lose 2 or 3. And so what that told me was, okay, he's a guy who, if he figures this out, he can be a home run hitter. But you can't have all those negative runs. He just had way too many negative runs. And this year, he's become a more decisive runner at times. And at other times, he's a more patient runner and letting things develop. You know, they run a lot of zone runs as well as gap scheme, and he excels in both. And I think he's just a more intelligent runner, and he's a tougher runner as well. He played with a partially torn labrum last year, which was not something I knew at the time. He revealed that in training camp of this year. So I think back to maybe at times last year where maybe Marlon Mack wasn't as physical as you would like to see. And then now having that context, maybe I understand. But he's just a different player this year. And I think the coaching has helped him too. Look, I mean, he's got a great running back coach, and I think he's in the right offense where he can excel. You talked about Eric Ebron. Eric Ebron is interesting. What he's doing is not terribly different than what he did in Detroit. And that includes his drops. He's dropped some balls this year, which no one's talking about because he's got a lot more touchdowns. But the one thing that Eric Ebron is doing is he has had such an efficient season. Like 1 out of every 4 catches he's made this year or something ridiculous like that has been a touchdown. I mean, it's just unheard of. So he's been very efficient and made his touches really count. And he's playing with a quarterback in Andrew Luck, who has had great success with tight ends. A coach in Frank Reich, who, think about the Philadelphia Eagles, who, you know, obviously, the Eagles, the tight ends are such a huge component of their offense. Well, there are a lot of components of the Eagles' offense in Frank Reich's scheme because he works with Doug Peterson. And so he has brought that to Indianapolis, and just the tight ends are just always going to be a big part of this offense. A name to know is Mo Alie-Cox, and he's not a guy any of your listeners probably know anything about, and that's fine because about 1.5 years ago he was playing college basketball at Virginia Commonwealth. That's a true story. They turned him into a football player because he didn't have pro prospects in basketball, and he has become really the replacement for Jack Doyle and really gave their running game a boost last week with some critical blocks against the Cowboys. But he's also a very competent receiver and has perhaps, we think, the biggest hands in the NFL. I'm not kidding about that. So he's a real factor in the passing game when they want him to be as well.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traynor and special guest Stephen Holder. Take a short break, come back, talk more Giants Colts. So stay with us.
The Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, follow Locked On NFL Net to get all the latest breaking news and game highlights from the Locked On Podcast Network NFL hosts, all on one convenient feed. On Instagram, Locked On NFL Net gives you the biggest stories, including audio cuts as provided by the various Locked On NFL team hosts. Make sure you follow Locked On NFL Net on both Twitter and Instagram to get your daily fill of the NFL. Hey, Giant fans. Bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs this weekend and all season long at DraftKings, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. How huge? We're talking over $1.5 million in total prizes. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft a new team every week with no season-long commitment. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play. Because nothing makes Football Sunday more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup in the line. And you can play free with your first deposit to compete for your share of over $1.5 million in total prizes. Go to DraftKings.com or download the app today. Use the code LOCKEDON to enter a contest for free this weekend with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $1.5 million in total prizes. That's code LOCKEDON, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. You're with Patricia Traynor, your host, and I'm joined by Stephen Holder, who covers the Indianapolis Colts for The Athletic in Indianapolis. He does a really good job. Make sure you check out his work. And Stephen, you know, we've been talking about the Colts offense, but I want to focus on the pit, if I could, for a moment, because last week the Giants had all kinds of problems in the pit on both sides, offense and defense. Who are some of the guys on the Colts that you think are going to be just too much to handle or a load to handle for the Giants on each side of the ball?
Well, there's always the challenge of dealing with T.Y. Hilton at receiver, obviously. And look, I mean, he's certainly not the biggest and maybe not the most physical receiver you're going to see, but he really does have an ability to, first of all, he's a great route runner. So he creates separation that way. And then he's just flat out fast. So you put that combination together, and he really is a challenge. He really is a handful, especially against man coverage. When teams play zone, they'll often sort of bracket him, and he tends to struggle with that at times. But not every team does that well. So sometimes teams prefer to play man, whatever it might be. But so when you match up with him and you really do give him single coverage, he can create real problems for you. So he's going to be a guy that every defensive coordinator is going to spend a lot of time on, obviously. I think another guy that you'll certainly hear his name on Sunday is Darius Leonard. He's a rookie weak side linebacker. And Darius Leonard, you know, I actually thought he might make the Pro Bowl cut. He just missed it, apparently. But Darius Leonard has been quite the find for the Colts. He's the NFL's leading tackler, number one, but that's really not the full breadth of his impact. He's been really good in coverage this year, and the Colts do drop their linebackers in coverage quite a bit, so he has to play a big role there in the middle of the field. And he's also a guy who's a real presence in the backfield as well. They'll blitz him. He'll run blitz. He's got lots of tackles for loss this year. So he's a real factor just all over the field, and he hustles, so he's going to make a lot of plays that way. And then, you know, you obviously mentioned Eric Ebron, and with him, with Eric, it's really he's a matchup problem really because of a couple things. Number one, he's not necessarily the most athletic guy, but he can run, and he certainly is a matchup problem because of his size, and he has just an ability to make contested catches. So you can be all over him and cover him really well, and he can make that contested catch. So that's going to be something that at times frustrates defenders when they match up with Eric Ebron. So those are, I think, a handful of guys that I'd point out. Maybe one other guy to note is Denico Autry, who is a defensive tackle. He can really play all over the defensive line, but he has just really come on in the past month. They got him as a free agent from the Oakland Raiders. He was kind of an under-the-radar guy, but he really has, I think, blossomed here in the last month and has been one of the reasons the Colts defense has started to come into its own. So he's starting to attract a lot of attention from offensive lines, and they're starting to scheme against him. He's got a 3-sack game already in the past month against Jacksonville. So, I mean, he's just really been a presence both against the run and pass. And I would imagine you'll see some of him on Sunday.
Now, on the offensive line, a guy that I know Giant fans were interested in acquiring, and I believe the Colts got him, is Quentin Nelson. How has his development come along?
Oh, he is probably one of the biggest reasons for the Colts' success this year. And it's weird because he's a guard, right? And the initial thought on an offensive lineman is that's not the type of guy who can help turn around a franchise. But you know, it's funny, their offensive coordinator, Nick Sirianni, was saying this week that, you know, the question was asked to him, well, look, you know, the Giants picked Saquon and guys like that, you know, can have an immediate impact and put the ball in the end zone. And, you know, do you feel that Quentin Nelson has had a similar impact, you know, being a top 10 pick? And it's funny, he said unequivocally, yes. The reason, as he put it, is you may not have a necessarily a stat line as an offensive lineman, but a guy like Quentin Nelson, the way he's played this year, so physically and so stout up front, that guy makes your skill position players better. So you get a better version of Andrew Luck, a better version of T.Y. Hilton, and a better version of Marlon Mack, for example. And he really emphasized that. He said they've gotten more out of those guys because of what Quentin Nelson allows them to do. So I'm going to tell you, he has been everything they hoped he would be, and maybe even a little more. He made the Pro Bowl this week. He has been fantastic. And I always wondered if he could play well enough to justify the Colts drafting a guard at number 6 overall, right? I mean, that's just not something you see very often, but he really has. They have no regrets whatsoever. He has been fabulous.
And I'm sure Giant fans are going to sit there and say, what if? Although they did get a good one in Saquon Barkley, who I don't think anyone is going to complain about. Stephen, who, if there's one matchup, be it on the offense or the defense, that concerns you from the Colts' perspective, what would that be this weekend?
Well, look, certainly one of the things the Colts have to do is I think they need balance in their offense. And, you know, they really didn't have that in the previous two games before meeting Dallas. So I just want to see if they can keep their running game going and continue to attack up front. And so that, I think, is – it's funny. People see Andrew Luck and they think, you know, that's where the defensive coordinators will focus their efforts. And certainly, you know, they will. But I think for the Colts, if you're the Giants, I think you got to stop the run and make this team one-dimensional. And when teams do that, I mean, the Jaguars did that a couple of weeks ago. And the Colts walked out of there with a loss. They were not able to run the ball in that game. And Andrew Luck threw the ball 50 or so times in that game, and they did not score. Now, that game, I can't explain it. I don't know what happened. It was truly the aberration. But that being said, the inability to run the ball was a big reason they struggled that day. Not the only one, but certainly the biggest, or one of the biggest. So for the Giants, I mean, if the Giants can hold up against the run, it's going to change the complexion of this matchup, I think, because Frank Reich, as a play caller, he really does really strive for balance. And when he gets it, he's a different play caller when he has balance. He's a much more effective play caller. So that's something that I'm going to be watching, and I am every single week. It's no different than every other week. They've got to be able to run the ball.
Now, with the Colts coming off the shutout win over Dallas, I mean, is there a concern that maybe they're looking at this Giants game, kind of looking past them, if you will? You know, is there any concern that this is going to be a trap game for them?
Right. I've wondered that, and but I just don't think so. And I'll tell you why, because I think they have displayed already a really good ability to focus. And they focused when they were 1-5, and they treated 1-5 the same as 8-6. And that's a really hard thing to do, especially I talked about them being a young team, right? And I was just so impressed that they were able to do that. And that's a product of the leadership. I think Frank Reich has this ability to be the same guy every day. And I've talked to people about this, and this is the one thing they all echo, is that Frank Reich, he really is the same guy in every situation, the ultimate even-keeled guy. And I think his team reflects that. Look, they're playing for the playoffs. They have what an opportunity they have. This was supposed to be a rebuilding year, and it is a rebuilding year, right? They're still trying to figure out, you know, what they're going to be in the long term, but they got a chance to go to the playoffs, and they need a little help, but not a lot. They don't need many things to happen. So the Colts really, they're looking at a situation where if they win out, they have a very, very good chance of getting to the postseason. So I don't think they've come this far to let up now. I would be very shocked and I'd be very disappointed if they did that.
Last question from me, Stephen. What are your expectations in terms of how this game unfolds? Do you think that the Colts are going to come out attacking, I don't know, through the air or through the run? I know you mentioned you're looking for balance. I mean, how do you see this game kind of playing out? And give me a prediction.
So I think the Colts are just going to kind of – they're going to kind of be themselves. And the one thing they do – especially defensively, and it's always a key. Defensively, the one thing they do is they keep everything in front of them, but they really rely heavily on their zone scheme, and they keep everything in front of them. They don't let you throw the ball deep. The Cowboys' longest play or longest pass play on Sunday was 18 yards, 18. And so that is one of the hallmarks of the scheme that they play. So they're going to try to do the same thing to Eli, I would imagine, and make it tough for them to throw the ball over the top. And so when you do that, you know, that you got to have success with the run game. So really it's going to boil down to, I really don't see them being able to be the one team that can have success throwing the ball deep when no one else really has against the Colts. So the game could in fact boil down to, can the Colts stop Barkley? Can they limit him and put this game in the hands of the quarterback and give the Giants long down and distances, which is what the Colts want anyway. So that plays right into their hands. So that's where I see this game turning. And they've just been so good against the run in recent weeks that I feel pretty good about it. I mean, to go up against the number one rusher in the league last week and with Dallas and certainly with Zeke, and to come away basically, you know, having the Cowboys give up on the running game after a while. Zeke had 5 carries in the second half because the yards just weren't there. So I think the Colts can duplicate that. They're at home, certainly, a lot on the line. So I think that's where the game's won and lost. And I'm going to say the Colts get it done. I think the prediction, if you want one, if you want score, I take the Colts 27-20. I think, you know, I don't necessarily think they blow it open. I think they do give up some points, but I think they do enough to get the win, 27-20.
Okay, so there you have it, folks, 27-20, and against the Giants team who was eliminated from the playoffs last week. They had to win out, get some help elsewhere, weren't able to get the job done. Tough matchup this weekend. It's certainly going to be an interesting one. Stephen, appreciate you coming on. Before I let you go, obviously people can find you on The Athletic. Where else can they find your work, your social media, and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so I am on Twitter, and you can follow me there at Holder Stephen, HolderStephen. So lots of good coverage in The Athletic Indiana, as well as certainly the New York market. Check us out.
All right. Appreciate you coming on and talking about the upcoming matchup. Giant fans, stay tuned. When we come back in segment 3, I'm going to talk a little bit about the news of the Giants Pro Bowlers. So do stay with us.
Hey, Giant fans. With the temperatures dropping in parts of the country, it's important to stay warm, especially if you're partaking in outdoor activities. And if you've been looking for an apparel line that keeps you warm and toasty in the frigid temperatures, you got to check out Action Heat, makers of the world's best battery-heated clothing. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees and are powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours on each charge, and which can also be used to recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. Action Heat's clothing line is great for anyone who works outdoors, who skis or is a snowboarder, joggers, or anyone who loves the outdoors but hates being cold. Action Heat offers heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments such as heated base layer shirts and long johns, available for both men and women with several styles to choose from. And now, listeners to the Locked On Giants podcast can save 20% off their entire order at actionheat.com when they enter the coupon code LOCKEDON. Stay toasty warm while you enjoy all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. Visit actionheat.com and remember to enter your special promo code LOCKEDON, that's all one word, to save your 20% discount on your entire order. All right. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. And special thanks again to Stephen Holder of The Athletic Indianapolis. Appreciate him coming on and taking the time to break down the Colts, who host the Giants in what is the Giants' final road game of 2018. And I wanted to spend this last segment of the show talking about the Pro Bowl selections, specifically the Giants' Pro Bowl selections. Of course, the AFC and NFC Pro Bowl teams were announced Tuesday evening, and a few surprises amongst the Giants in terms of their alternates and in terms of a couple of the guys that made it, and actually some non-surprises. So let's just go down the list for those not aware. The three Giants that made it in to the Pro Bowl include running back Saquon Barkley, safety Landon Collins, and kicker Aldrick Rosas. Rosas is going to be a starter. Collins was voted in as a starter, but of course, with him being on injured reserve, he's not going to be able to play in the game. And Barkley was voted in as a backup. So Barkley becomes the first Giants rookie running back to be selected to the Pro Bowl since, I believe, 1965. And he is also the first running back, the first Giants running back to make the Pro Bowl since Tiki Barber did it in the last of his three consecutive appearances in 2006. Barkley also is the first Giants rookie to make the Pro Bowl since Beckham in 2014. And just going back to that, you know, rookie running back honor, Tucker Fredrickson was the one who made it in 1965. So a tremendous honor for Saquon Barkley, who is third in rushing yards behind Ezekiel Elliott and Todd Gurley, and also currently third in all-purpose yards behind Elliott and Gurley. Okay, Landon Collins, as I mentioned, he was voted in as a starter, but because he is on injured reserve, he's not going to play in this game. You know, he's recovering from shoulder surgery. He's looking at a 4 to 6 month recovery. It is Collins' third Pro Bowl berth. Second one, unfortunately, that he's going to have to miss in a row. So I'm sure that's probably, you know, irking at him, but such is life, unfortunately. It's the important thing is for him to get better and get a contract and get signed someplace. And Aldrick Rosas, how about the season this young man has had? Now, this is a kid who last year was at the bottom of the NFL in field goal percentages. And now he is right up there at the top. He has converted over 96% of his field goal attempts. He is also the first Giant since Josh Brown in 2015 to score 100 points. So just a tremendous turnaround for Aldrick Rosas, who, you know, let's face it, a lot of Giant fans wanted to see this guy cut after last year because he was so poor. And the Giants stuck with him. They liked his big leg. They worked with him to shorten up his kicking motion, and it's really paid dividends. And you know, another thing that's really paid dividends for Aldrick Rosas is the fact that he no longer gets rattled if things don't go, you know, perfectly. So kudos to him on that. All right, now, the Giants had three guys place as alternates, and this is where some of the surprise actually comes. Michael Thomas was placed as a first-team alternate on special teams. That's not a surprise. Michael Thomas has just been a tremendous player. And, you know, the last couple weeks since Landon Collins has been injured and on IR, Thomas has had to step up and he has had to play more defense. So his special teams role has reduced a little bit, but when he's out there, he's still doing his thing. And just, he's probably by far the best offseason signing that Dave Gettleman made in his first year as general manager. Here's a surprise for you. Olivier Vernon was named a first-team alternate
and the defense. Now, that's a surprise because Vernon, of course, missed the first 6 weeks of the season with that high ankle sprain that he suffered toward the end of the summer. And it took him, you know, a few weeks for him to really get back in there and you know, get his feet under him. And, you know, he's run a little hot and cold lately. You know, there was a streak of games there where he was, you know, he had multiple game sacks. And then last week he was kind of quiet. So, you know, I just thought that was a little bit of a surprise, if I'm being honest with you. I think if, you know, he had been voted in and not missed, you know, the start of the season, based on what we saw in the summer, I mean, he looked like he was going to tear it up. But, you know, obviously the injury factored into the equation, and he just, his numbers aren't really, you know, when you look at them, you say to yourself, they're pedestrian at best. And who knows if Olivier Vernon is even going to be on this team next year. I mean, he's got a $17 million cap hit. Who knows if they're going to keep him or if they're going to look to move him via a trade. It's going to be a tough call for Dave Gettleman, I think, because Vernon's only 28 years old, still considered in his prime. If he can stay healthy, I think he can be a really, really good player for this defense. But, you know, look, the Giants need a pass rush, and they were counting on him. And when he went down, they didn't have that pass rush. And the hope is next year Lorenzo Carter will bring that pass rush. And also in the draft class, there's said to be a lot of pass rushers that can be had in that first round. So it'll be interesting to see if the Giants keep Vernon or if they cut him loose and go with a cheaper option from the draft. Then last but not least, Odell Beckham Jr., was named as a second alternate at wide receiver. That's right, a second alternate. And what's interesting here is the guys in front of him, I mean, it's kind of hard, I think, to argue this. He's a tremendous player. He's a guy that, you know, you notice when he is not in there. You know, we saw it last week. We saw how, you know, how the Giants offense was missing guys who can get open. So, you know, big loss for the Giants when he is not in there. So the four receivers that were voted in front of him, I want to say Julio Jones, Adams from Green Bay, Mike Thomas down in New Orleans, and Adam Thielen from Minnesota, I believe, were the four guys that were voted in ahead of Beckham. And, you know, kind of tough to argue that because those are all game changers, or they've all been game changers for their respective teams. So, but here's the thing I tend to think. Knowing how Beckham is, I got to think, you know, he came into this season wanting to have his best year ever, wanting to be the best he could possibly be. And I got to think that this snub, and, you know, let's call it for what it is. It is a snub. I bet anything it ends up sticking in his craw, and he takes it, and he just comes out next year, and look out, world. If this kid stays healthy, he's going to just tear things up. So just a real interesting development there for Beckham to not make the Pro Bowl. I think this is, I want to say, the first time in his career he hasn't made the Pro Bowl. And, you know, not counting the year that he was injured, obviously. So, anyway, that's your Giants Pro Bowl selections. And for those who don't know, obviously the selections are based on the fan vote. They are based on player votes around the league and also on coaches' votes. And if I remember correctly, players and coaches are not allowed to vote for their teammates or their own. So the voting is basically, you know, from their peers. That counts as 2/3 of the voting, and the fan vote, I think, is 1/3. So, interesting scenario. And of course, we will see how many of the Giants alternates actually get into the game. I think, you know, Vernon will probably have a good shot of getting into the game. I think Mike Thomas will probably have a good chance. And depending on who's ahead of Beckham, in terms of the first alternate at wide receiver, we'll see if he gets an opportunity to go. We'll see if he even wants to go at that point. So, all right, Giant fans, that'll wrap up today's show. Again, thanks to Stephen Holder of The Athletic from Indiana for coming on to talk about the Colts. Thanks to you guys for listening, as always. Be sure to tune in tomorrow. I'll have Charlie Campbell of Walter Football on the program. He'll talk draft. He'll talk Giant needs. We'll talk about prospects, free agents, and all that good stuff. So be sure you tune in tomorrow as well. Patricia Traina signing off.